Matthew 11, verse 2. When John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No, those who wear fine clothes are in king's palaces. Then what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' I tell you the truth, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcefully advancing, and forceful men lay hold of it. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. And if you're willing to accept it, he is the Elijah who was to come. He who has ears, let him hear."
Hello, my name is Amy. I am one of the youth pastors here. My first question for you is this: what could be better? Is there anything better than when your expectations are not met? What is better than when your expectations aren't met? It's when someone exceeds your expectations. Am I right? Let me tell you a story that demonstrates this in my life. I love getting presents. I love to tell people that fact because I think that they should know that's one of the ways that I feel loved. 21st birthday, everyone knows that is the time. If you're going to go all out for a present, it's that birthday. So my birthday morning, I wake up with great expectation. My friends have laid out the breakfast table. There's pancakes, there is champagne, there's orange juice. It is a good breakfast. And then the presents come, and I'm opening them and I'm feeling loved. I'm like, this is good. My friends listen. They know that I love presents. And then we get to the present of the person who was at that time my boyfriend. It's an envelope. I open up the envelope. I'm disappointed. I am very disappointed about what is in this envelope. And all these questions come up for me. Are you kidding me? Do you even know me at all? Do you know that I like presents? You've just gotten me something that you think, oh, she's a girl, she's gonna like this. Do you even care about me? Are you trying to tell me something? I'm going through all these different questions in my mind. I'm a little bit salty about this situation. We get to the point and I go to redeem what is on this piece of paper. It should be made clear, I'd never experienced this gift before. I had no idea what to expect, but my expectations of it were low. What the present was a 3-hour massage and facial. Now for me, I was like, that sounds lame. Like, just because I'm a girl doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy this. I went. Oh lordy. My expectations were exceeded because I had never enjoyed 3 hours more in my life to just completely relax and just be pampered and looked after. That was the scenario in which my expectations were exceeded. And today we're in our series of sticking points, right? Things that kind of get you stuck in your faith. And we're looking at doubt. Doubt. How does doubt kind of connect with expectations? Well, this is what I want to talk to you about. Doubt can be a sticking point, particularly when Jesus isn't doing what you're expecting him to do. Doubt can be a sticking point, particularly when you are not when Jesus isn't doing what you're expecting him to do. So we begin in chapter 11. Verse 1, it says that after Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went on from there to teach and preach in the towns of Galilee. Okay, this is a break in the narrative that is the Gospel of Matthew. Okay, we've heard about Jesus' genealogy, his birth, his upbringing. We've heard about his ministry in chapters 8 and 9. And then in chapter 10, he sends out his disciples. He says, go do some of the ministry that I've been doing. And then chapter 11 is a bit of a different scenario. Here is where we start seeing people responding to Jesus and how he responds to them. How people respond to Jesus and how he responds to them. And tonight we're looking at John's response. So verse 2, when John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect somebody else? Okay, let's begin with John. It's important to understand the person who is asking this question. This is John the Baptist. If we've been reading Matthew all the way through, reading it as it's intended to be written, we would have met John the Baptist in chapter 3. Okay, in chapter 3, we read that he's been preaching in the wilderness of Judea. He's telling people, guys, you need to repent. The kingdom of heaven has come near. You might know him as that guy who wore camel's hair, he ate locusts and honey, and yet people still came to him from all over. They came to him, they confessed their sins, they were baptized by him. And then Jesus comes, and Jesus goes, I want to be baptized. And John's like, no, I don't think you get how this works. I need to be baptized by you. This is a man who is certain about who Jesus is. He has been seeing so many people coming to this river to be baptized, and when he meets Jesus, he goes, you're it. You're the Messiah that we have been waiting for. And then we come to our passage, chapter 11. And he doesn't seem so certain. He doesn't seem so certain anymore. And you go, what's going on, John? Verse 2, it tells us, John, who was in prison. Things aren't going so well. Things have taken a turn for the worse. And in this change of situation, he asks, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect somebody else? John's saying, Jesus, I'm having a hard time believing in you. And what I'd like to do is we're going to actually hear the testimony of one of our very own who knows this. Because what is happening here in the Bible, it's not something that happened long and long ago that's never going to happen again. This is something that is true for every Christian who has lived since then. And so I want to share the story of one of our year 12 students who gets this. She made a commitment to Jesus to follow him, and then situation changed. Things got harder. So we're going to share the first half of her story. Watch the screen.
My name is Emma, and I am currently studying my HSC at William Clark College. I guess my relationship with Jesus has been for quite a while. I've known him for a very long time. I grew up in a Christian family, going to church every Sunday. My real relationship with Jesus started in 2012 at Impact. I recommitted my life, and I think that was when I really started to take a serious interest in looking and living more like Jesus. A year before Impact, my mum had been diagnosed with breast cancer, so I was dealing with that as I recommitted my life in full understanding of what could happen. However, I don't think that the real weight of what my mother was going through was felt until the cancer had spread quite a lot. And as her situation got more intense and more scary, I started to question whether there was a real God and question how such a loving God can make such awful things happen to someone so dedicated to making him known. I remember sitting and just crying out to God and praying to just make those levels in her lungs get better and better. On Australia Day in 2012, my mum passed away from cancer. It was really soon after that impact where I had recommitted my life to Christ, and I guess that was a shock because I thought I had just started this new relationship, so why are all these bad things happening? At this point, I was quite strong, so I did trust that God would provide for my family. And after my mum passed away, I put on quite a good front, I think. I went through a massive period of self-loathing and self-hate. Just having to grow up without a mum is very confusing, and putting all this pressure on yourself, unnecessary pressure that Jesus doesn't want you to put on. I believed that bad people were supposed to die, not that good people like my mum were. People that devoted their lives to Christ, that showed God's love in everything that they do. She would, just strive to show God's love to us in every way, shape and form. This was the just massive thing that changed my life. I hadn't experienced what it was to feel any real hurt as my mum passed, and as arguments began to happen in our family, and as going on with life without her continued, my love and my trust in God pretty much diminished.
As I listen to the testimony of Emma, and as I reflect on John's story, I realize that the heart of these questions is not actually about the circumstance or about the situation. It's about an unmet expectation. See, we look at chapter 3 where John is preaching and he's teaching, right? And he's teaching people, you need to repent because the kingdom of heaven is near. What did he mean by that? Kingdom of heaven is the establishment of God's rule. And so John, he rightly believed the Messiah, he's going to come and he's going to bring about this rule. The Messiah is going to bring judgment with that. That is what John preached and what people responded to. The Jews, John included, they anticipated that Jesus' messiahship, it would bring political and military liberation. And yet John looks around at his world and he goes, what? The Romans, they're still in control. They're still dominating the Jews. Herod's still king. He's the one who's put me in jail. I'm in jail. And Jesus, Isaiah says that you'll set the captives free. Why am I still sitting here? The religious establishment is still in place and is against John's preaching, against Jesus' preaching. There's division about leadership of Jesus, and final judgment is not happening. John feels this disappointment. He's like, Jesus, my expectations for you as the Messiah, they were here. And you're not meeting them. You're not doing what I expected you to do. And so John rightly asks, are you the one to come? Or is there someone else that we should expect? So I wonder, what are your expectations of God? What are your expectations of a Messiah? Because maybe you think, I don't need a Messiah. But we all know that there's something not right with this world. Like, just look at this world for a minute. The rich get richer and the poor get even poorer. Wars come and they just completely rip apart families indiscriminately. They destroy communities. Parents sell their kids into the sex industry just to earn more money. This world is broken. Everyone can see that. So do we have an issue with the fact that there is evil and oppression and slavery and injustice in our world? Or do we have an issue with the fact that God says he's loving, all-powerful, all-knowing, and yet there is evil, oppression, slavery, and injustice in the world? That was the experience of Emma. To quote her, she says, I started to question how such a loving God can make such awful things happen to someone so dedicated to making him known. Sometimes our experience what we perceive, it doesn't match our expectations of God. God's not living up to our expectations of a Messiah. I want you to notice John's question. It isn't, are you the one who is to come, or isn't there any? No, he says, are you the one to come, or should we expect somebody else? Who's going to be our Messiah? Who's going to be our Savior? That phrase, are you the one, I think it's quite modern, right? Coming from the Bible, it's fairly modern. Don't tell me you haven't gone to some kind of social context. Maybe it's a conference or it's been at church and you've thought, are you the one? Maybe you're the one, right? Are you the one who's going to come and make me feel better about my insecurities? He's going to boost my self-esteem. Are you the one I'm going to be able to pour myself into because I've got so much to give and I just want to give it to one special person? Or maybe it's your career. Have you looked at the different career options and thought, okay, are you the one? Are you going to bring me fulfillment? Are you going to bring me purpose and significance and security? See, in other words, we're looking for something. We're looking for someone to live for. And so Jesus, if you're not the one, well, then I need to find someone or something that's going to infuse my life with meaning and significance and safety. The only problem is, often those things don't meet our expectations either. And so I want to take us to Jesus and look at how Jesus responds to all of this. See, first thing that I notice is that he doesn't scold John. He doesn't tell him off and rebuke him and say, excuse me, do you not remember that encounter we had at the river when you knew who I was? How could you forget all the things that I've revealed to you? No, he doesn't go off. He just listens. He provides this biblical answer. And in fact, in verse 11, you heard Karen read out, he tells other people, among those born of women, there's not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Despite his questions, despite his doubts, Jesus still advocates for him and says that he's great. It's clear from this passage that doubting is okay. Having questions, having doubts is okay. And as we bring our questions to Jesus, we need to listen to what he has to say and be prepared that maybe he's got some questions of his own. Verse 4, Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. When I read this, I wonder, why would Jesus tell them what to say when he said, go back and report what you've heard and seen? If I told you, hey, after you leave here, just go and tell people what you've seen and heard. But I want you to use this particular language and say, Amy said, da 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 da. There's a purpose in that. There is a particular reason why Jesus had used these words to summarize his ministry from chapters 8 and 9. See, with these words, he references Isaiah 29, Isaiah 35, Isaiah 61, passages that John would have known, passages that the Jews who this was originally written to would have known and gone, bing! Ah, I know that. I know that verse. These passages predict the ministry of the Messiah. And Jesus is saying, hey, John, to answer your question, yes, I am the one. I am the one that you've been looking for. And I'm doing the ministry that was predicted of the Messiah. See, sometimes the Old Testament prophets and sometimes the New Testament writers, they compress the first and the second coming of Jesus. So it kind of just sounds like one event. And Jesus is correcting John and saying, you're not wrong. Judgment is coming. People have got to repent. But the full, pure experience of the kingdom of heaven, that's going to be realized at my second coming. And so what is better than unmet expectations? When those expectations are exceeded. So John thought, Jesus is going to come and he's going to overthrow this Roman Empire. He's going to take the throne of King Herod. And Jesus dreamed bigger than that. By his death on the cross and his resurrection, he has overthrown every empire, every political state and military leader, all authority and power for all time. In every geographical location, in every culture, he is the king of this whole world, and we are in his kingdom. John heard and saw that, okay, Jesus is healing people physically and he's proclaiming good news to the poor. And Jesus thought, yes, physical healing, it's of some value. But these people, they will die one day. And so what is more important is giving sight to the spiritually blind so they can understand who Jesus truly is, so they can enter the kingdom of heaven and they can look forward to a new heaven, a new earth, free from pain and suffering and evil. Jesus didn't just proclaim the good news, he became the good news. Jesus exceeded the expectations of John the Baptist. Is it unbelievable that he would exceed yours? And so I want us to think about, okay, what do we actually do with our doubt? We've gotten to the point where we accept, we all feel it, we all understand it. Jesus says it's okay, but what do we do with that? So I'm going to give you two suggestions. Number one, we need to look for the work of the Spirit in people's lives. We need to be looking for the work of the Spirit in people's lives, because as we wait for him to return, and as that day when all evil will be completely eradicated, we need to remind ourselves, we need to remind each other that, okay, maybe God's not doing what I'm expecting him to do. Maybe he's not doing what I want him to do. But that does not mean that he is not at work. He is still at work. Recently, I read an article. It said, as a counselor, I see people who feel stuck. Yet the Spirit is with them and the evidences are everywhere. Look for the work of the Spirit in someone's life. Ask for a story of what God is doing. It will remind you that we are living in the age of the Spirit. For the Christians in the room, we need to work on our conversations. As a body of believers, we've got to talk about what God is doing in our lives. Not just those big ticket items that are easy to talk about. Oh, God gave me a job that I was praying for. He answered our prayers about surgery and everything went well. He gave us a miracle baby. They are good things to be celebrated. But we should not belittle the things that God does in the everyday. We should not diminish the things that he does in the everyday. Those prayers of, I ask for boldness to talk to my family about my Fiji mission trip because I was scared. And he answered that prayer and I had an hour-long conversation with my cousin. Or I had a year 9 class coming up and I knew there was some rat bags in it. And I prayed about it and there is no way to explain it except that God must have been in that room, because they behaved unlike anyone has ever reported them to. Or I've been praying that God would just remind me that he loves me. And in watching We Bought a Zoo, I start bawling because I'm reminded of how much he loves us as a father. In the everyday, God is at work doing things in our lives. We need to share that with one another. And maybe you don't know how to ask these questions. There can be that awkwardness of, oh, how do I do this? Well, get out your pens. I'm going to give you some suggestions. These are the things that I do. First off, my first advice is if when you're vulnerable and humble, people respond that and they can open up and share as well. You've got to take the initiative and begin these conversations. Just tell people, I'm struggling. I can't see God working in my life. I'm asking for these things and I'm not getting the answers that I want. Could you just tell me something God's been teaching you, something that you've seen in your life? Maybe you could say, hey, I've been praying about that thing you told me about. Have you seen God working in that? Have you seen him answering those prayers? Check in on those things that you're praying about. How'd you find the sermon tonight? Did it touch upon anything that God's been teaching you? Was there anything that kind of stuck out to you? Or even just how are things going between you and God? Is it a bit of radio silence? Are you fighting all the time? Are you just joyful and talking to him incessantly? Just how is that going? What's happening in that relationship? Tell me about it, please. Because maybe God isn't doing what you're expecting or wanting him to do, but that does not mean he isn't at work. Just as Jesus pointed out to John, the evidence of what he was doing. So the Spirit can point out to us where God is at work. Second suggestion of what we can do is think about what has John done with his doubt. He took it to Jesus. He took it to Jesus. In verse 6, Jesus says, "Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." We got to constantly come back to Jesus and have him remind us of who he is. Because Jesus is saying, don't run away from me with your doubts. Come to me. He is saying to you, come to me. This is a relationship. Bring those questions, those doubts to me. If there's something going on between me and a housemate, I can talk to people all I want about it. They might give me some good advice. They might give me some bad advice. But that relationship's not going to change. It's not going to move forward unless I go directly to that person. Jesus wants you to bring these questions and these doubts to him. Final reminder, more knowledge about God doesn't mean less doubt. Sorry to say, this is not a math equation. There is no preventative strategy for doubt because we all experience it at different points in our walk. And so we've got to help each other out of it. We need to be reminded of who Jesus is because he doesn't change, even though our circumstance, our situation does, our expectations of him do. I want you to think of it like this. Right now, pretty comfortable, healthy, happy, safe, standing on this stage, right? Because I am in harmony with the laws of gravity. If I went onto the roof of this building and I stood off the edge, I'd fall to the ground. Does the law of gravity suddenly become vindictive or evil or punitive or retributive? No. It keeps on being the law of gravity. I have just stepped out of harmony with it, and there's consequences that I'm going to feel from that. I'm going to feel a bit broken and a bit bruised and a bit battered. In the same way, when humanity steps off the roof spiritually, when we turn away from that relationship with God, does God suddenly become mean and vindictive and evil? No. He just keeps on being God, but we have stepped out of harmony with him. We experience individually, collectively, the consequences of trying to live our lives without God and as though he wasn't the king of this world. To finish, I wanted us to watch the second half of Emma's testimony. We're going to hear about her journey and how she's brought this before Jesus. Let's watch.
As I kept on going, as I kept going to youth, as I kept going to Impact every year, as I kept asking questions and figuring out stuff, my relationship with God started to strengthen. I don't think that it was any one person who led me to keep on trying to reconcile things with God. In all honesty, that it was just God not letting me go, that it was him pulling me out and pulling me out of this awful depression I was facing, just into his loving arms. I can't explain exactly how it happened, but I just know that it did. But as I have grown and learnt more through asking questions and really delving into understanding what the significance of Jesus dying is, I can see that without Jesus' death, there is no hope. Jesus' death gives so much hope, and now and for the future. I can look forward to meeting my mum again in heaven and understanding that she is celebrating and dancing and singing with Jesus now. I miss her every single day. I miss her laugh and her incredible hugs. I miss her cooking and I miss her just everything. God doesn't want you to do it by yourself though. He doesn't want you to go through this time of hurt and pain looking for other things to fill the void that was left. He wanted me to reach out to him. And it took me time to figure that out, and it still takes me time as I grapple with other things. He pulled me out of the depression I was facing. He pulled me out of the hurt and the suffering. He pulled me out of the self-hate and into his loving embrace so that I could learn to love again, learn to trust again, and learn to be who he wants me to be. Life doesn't always turn out the way that you intended it to, but life will always turn out the way that God intended it. I encourage you to pray for storms. God has taught me to be thankful for what I've been through and thankful what I will endure in the future. I will encourage you to just pray for times where you are at your lowest so that God can pull you out and teach you so much more than you ever thought was possible.
What an encouraging story. And notice Emma's not saying, don't want the storms, get rid of them. See, it's not about the situation. Her situation, it drew her closer into Jesus, but he didn't remove that. He didn't bring her mum back. He didn't heal her. What he did was remind her exactly of who he was. He comforted her and he was there for her, and he does that for us as well. Doubt can be a sticking point, particularly when Jesus is not doing what you're expecting him to do. That's why we need to look to the work of the Spirit in each other's lives and why we need to come to him with our questions and our doubts. I've talked so much about Jesus that I'd love for you to just spend some time with him now. Just talk to him about some of the things that you've been thinking about. If you're not someone who does talk to Jesus, that's okay. You can sit there and write down some questions or reply to a message. Maybe don't do that. Think about what was said. That's what I would prefer. But yeah, I want you to spend some time with him, and then we're going to stand and we'll sing together.